All right, we're going to start here at the bottom of Samach Vavim Bet on the last line. We have Amar of Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak. Here we're continuing to discuss the issues of mikveh and tevila, chatzitza, and other issues revolving a woman who goes to the mikveh to be mitahara herself from nida. So they have Isha lo titbol bin amal. Woman should not go to the mikveh in an amal. An amal, as Rashi points out, is a porto, a port. She shouldn't go into the port. Afogav de hashto leka imar birdune nafal. So even though right now we don't see anything, we're going to assume that something went wrong. This is a very difficult Gemara, and there's a lot of girsa changes. What I'm going to do is I'll read it like Rashi first, and afterwards we'll come back and discuss some of the alternatives to reading it. Rashi says the problem with the port is that the boats go into the port all the time, and they are bringing up dirt on the ground, and they could cause some sort of mud or clay to get caught on the woman or on the feet of the woman, and that'll cause a chatzitza. Well, she emerges from the area of the port, and after she comes out, we see that there's nothing on her body. So Rashi says, I really don't know what this word biridioni means, but I think it means that lashon shichshuch, that she moves her feet around, she shakes. And so what happens is as she emerges from this area of the port, she's going to move around, and as she moves around, any dirt or clay that had been caked on her is going to fall off. So even though now we have no evidence to the fact that there was something on her, we will assume that there was a problem. Then the next piece of the Gemara is Avua de Shmuel. We've seen this prior. Shmuel's father, Avua de Benate Mikvaot Beyomid Nisan, he used to make for his daughters Mikvaot in the springtime. Umapse Beyomid Tishrei, and he used to put down mats in Tishrei in the beginning of the fall time. Mats in the beginning of the fall time are because the water was running very low in the rivers, and since the water was running low in the rivers, they used to get their feet stuck in the mud at the bottom of the rivers. So he put down mats so that they wouldn't get their feet stuck in the mud or the clay at the bottom, and that would be a chatzitza. So according to Rashi, those two items are a continuum. The issue by Namal and the issue over here by the Mikvaot is the same issue, which is the issue of the water being turbid, there being clay at the bottom, being loose dirt at the bottom, and it will cause a chatzitza. And so one solution was the solution of Avodah Shmuel to put mats down. And the other issue is by the port. We don't let her do it over there because even though when she comes out, she doesn't see any dirt or mud or clay on her, we don't say that that means that she was clean all the way through. It might have been that it was on her and then it got shaken off or rubbed off as she came out or emerged from the water. Now, in terms of the mikvaot and the yomei dinisan, Rashi explains it here more extensively in Bechorot that the problem here is that during the rainy season, the rivers start to run high. At the end of the winter season, it's true in Eretz Yisrael, the end of the rainy season, the rivers run much higher because not only do they have the water from the springs that feed the rivers, but they also have the rain runoff that comes down into the rivers. And there's a difference between a spring and rainwater. When it comes to rainwater, in terms of a mikveh, the only way that rainwater can be mitaher is through a shboren. If it's gathered together and it's in a still area, it has to be in an enclosed area. Water that is flowing or rainwater that is flowing does not work as a mikveh, is not mitaher. On the other hand, a mayan, a spring, can be mitaher either through ashborin, at least according to the Rabbeinu Tam, or can be mitaher through flowing, zochalim, when it's flowing. The problem he has here is that these girls are going to the mikveh, they're going into the river, and the water that's coming down in the river is a mix of both mayan, the original source, and the rainwater. And what we're afraid of is in Yomei Nidisan, in the springtime, that the rivers will have more rainwater than they do spring water. And if that's the case, the only way to have a proper mikveh is to take the water off the river and to put it into a collection area, into a place where it would be still. Because if they were to be tovela in the river itself, they would have both rainwater and mayan water that is being mitahar them. The mayan works, bezochalim works when it's flowing, but the rainwater does not. And that's what they were afraid of, and that's why he made separate mikvaot, not allowing them to be tovel in the nahar, in the river, during Yomei Nidisan. But rather, he took the water out of the rivers and put them into enclosed locations so that they would have a mikveh that was separate. And now we have one more statement here, is which Amar Gildo Amarav, Natnat Tavshil Livna, if she was feeding her child, she was giving him to eat, Vitavla, and then she ran off to the mikveh, Ve'alta, and came out, Lo Alta La Tvila, her Tvila does not work, Avagav Dehashta Leka, again, the same statement that we had before by the port, even though now when she emerges from the mikveh, we do not see anything on her, nevertheless, we're going to say the same thing, which is biridioni nafal, that on her emergence from the mikveh, she came out, when she moved her legs, she paddled, she moved, they fell off. And therefore, we do not see what the problem was, but there was a problem. The problem here being that her child, that she was feeding food when she was cooking for him, bringing the food to him, feeding him, that she got some of that food on her, unbeknownst to her, and that creates a chatzitza for her when she goes into the mikveh. And that would be the connection between all of these three items. The three items have the same connection, which is that we're afraid of a chatzitza that is going to come on the woman, unbeknownst to her, either in the port or in the river, or now by her child. And that's the way Rashi reads these three cases. On the other hand, the Rach says that the problem by the mikvaot and the reason that they put the mats in Yom Tishrei had nothing to do with them getting caught at the bottom of the river or their feet getting stuck in the clay and the dirt, but rather it had to do with tzniut. In the Yom Tishrei, when the waters were low and the rivers were low and it's warm out, there were a lot of people around the rivers. And therefore, the daughters of Avod Shmuel were not willing to go to the mikveh because there were so many people around. So he made them private areas in the river so that they go to the mikveh without any concerns. He says that is the same problem. The Rabbeinu Tam and quotes the Rach as well, that the same problem by the port. Why do we not allow a woman to go to the mikveh in the port? There's nothing to do with, again, getting caught in the bottom of the port or anything like that. It has to do with it. That's a public place. It's an area where there are boats coming in and out all the time. There's sailors there all the time. And the woman will be uncomfortable going to the mikveh, and she'll rush going to the mikveh. She'll rush because she doesn't feel comfortable in those areas. So in order to prevent that problem, we say don't go to the mikveh there because we can't prevent that problem. Oh, very good, Shoal. Excellent. So Shoal says, and this is the point, they also connect it to the previous case. The previous case that we had yesterday was a case where a woman went into a mikveh or river and she was standing on top of a kli cheres, or she was standing on top of a piece of wood. Over there we said those are problematic because she is fearful. And when she's fearful, she's not going to go to the mikveh properly. So they claim that these are all a continuum. There's a continuum here of problems of tzniut, or problems where a woman's going to be rushed to go to the mikveh. So we have the case of the kli cheres, we have the next case here, which is the port, and we have the case afterwards, which is the mikvaot in Yom Tishrei, where they put up the machatzalot, they put up those fences so they could go in b'tzniut. The only problem with that explanation is the next case, the case by the woman who was feeding her child and it goes into the mikveh. There, the problem is clearly a problem of staining or chatzitza. And we use the term birijoni, the same term that we use by the port. So Rabbeinu Tam says the girsa doesn't have birijoni. He eliminates that from the girsa and says that whole piece at the end there is not part of our sugyo. It's not connected, and he eliminates either the birijoni part or he eliminates that whole case from the Gemara. It doesn't exist in the Gemara. And that way, he has a continuum. His continuum is about the issue of fear and the fact that there is no tzniut over here, in order to solve, these are all either to solve problems of tzniut, or to say you're not allowed to go to the mikveh because there's a lack of tzniut and she'll rush, and that's all these cases here. Whereas Rashi thinks all the issues here are issues of chatzitza. Now the alternatives for the word ridyoni, Rashi says he doesn't know what it means, but he suggests it means to paddle, to move your feet, to kick up, meaning that the dirt came out because she was moving in a certain manner. Tosafot brings other alternatives to the word ridyoni. He says, Mefeish Rabbeinu Tam b'shnei dalatin, meaning with two dalats, not a biridyoni, but rather bididyoni. He says, Lashon nidida, to move around. So that's where he gets the word from. And the Rach perish Lashon chuklaka b'nafal. She slips and falls in. So over there, it might be an issue of, again, this issue of fear, might be something where she falls in because she's rushing to go to the mikveh, and that'll cause these issues. So again, those are the different explanations of what is going on here. Tosfa mentions that in the Rach, in the Rabbeinu Chanan, he actually has an additional case which is not found in our Mishnah. He says, Perish Rach, Katuv, Od Memra, Cheret, which is, She'ena Ketuvah B'Sfarim. We don't have it in our Gemaras, Shelano. Mizohi, Mafshelet Bina, V'Tovelet. She throws her son over her back, and she goes into the mikveh, Lo Altala Tvila. Then the Tvila doesn't work. And the reason, V'yesh Lefresh Mafshelet Bina, Achorea, V'hi Aruma, she wasn't dressed, the tavla, and we're worried about now what's the problem here. When she throws her son over her shoulder, that he got her dirty. He's dirty, so he got her dirty, and he made put something on her that it would create a chatzitza, and that chatzitza will be a problem for the tavla. So that's an additional case that's not found in our Gemaras, but the Rach has in his Gemara. Now we continue on with other cases. Amarami bar Ava, Rivdei de Kusilta. These holes or bloodletting scabs, then atlata yome, if it's in the first 3 days after the bloodletting was done, lo chaitse, they're not a problem of a chatzitza, because they remain soft, and they're like the skin or the flesh around them. Mikan ve'elech, after 3 days, they already start to scab and harden, and therefore chaitse, they become a problem of a chatzitza, those scabs or those markings that are left over from the bloodletting. Amar Mar Ukva, we have an additional item here. Lifluf Shiba Ayin. The mucus that is in the eye, lach, if it's moist, ain't no chotzeitz. Then it's not chotzeitz because either the water can join it, it is moist, it's not considered to be something that will stay in there. Yavesh, on the other hand, if it's dried out, it is chotzeitz. Ematai nikran yavesh. When is it called dried out? Mishah shematchil liarek. It's from the time it begins to turn yellow or green, probably a yellowish green. Amar Shmuel, here have another case here. Kachol shebetocha ayin. When you have makeup that's in the eye, eno chotzeitz. That's not problematic. Mishah gabe ayin. That makeup that is on top of the eye, chotzeitz. So the difference between if you have eyeshadow that's on top of the eye, that would be problematic. The eye lining or mascara that's put inside of the eye, that may not be a problem. Imayu eneha porchot, if her eyes were fluttering, meaning that she was opening and closing them heavily, afilo agabe ayin, even if it's above on the outside of the eye, then eno chotzeitz, it's not a problem. So what we're worried about here is that the makeup in their day wasn't as good as the makeup today. Today the makeup is so good that it doesn't come off, and therefore it's a problem. When they go to the mikveh, women need to make sure that they take off all the makeup before they go into the mikveh. But in their day, they were using makeup that wasn't as good quality. And therefore, if you fluttered your eye a lot, it would cause it to be moist, or it would cause it to become faded and not exist there. So there, even if it's outside the eye, it would not be problematic. Why inside the eye it's not problematic is because of the either the tearing of the eye or the movement of the eye causes a moistening and it diminishes the makeup there. It takes it away, fades it, and therefore it's not going to be a problem of chatzitza. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Pitcha ena bioter. If she opens her eyes up really wide, oh, atzma ena bioter, or she closes her eyes very tight, lo al tala tvila, then the tvila doesn't work. Again, if she opens up too much, the upper eyelid is then covered and the waters can't get in there. If she closes them very tight, the lower part of the eyelid is covered up or closed and the waters can't get in over there, and it's going to be a problem that the waters can't get to those locations. And Tosafot points out over here, very interestingly, he says, "Lekach yesh lo mot b'chol isha hatovelet shelo tidvol v'tiftach eina v'lo tatzim eina biyoter." Make sure to follow this instruction, not to open your eyes too wide or close them too tight. The Perish Rashi. Then, Ulechol HaBirshim Tzarech L'lamda Liftoach Pia, to make sure that she opens up her mouth, She Ra'u the Biat HaMayim. Because we saw before, remember with the Shifcha of Rabbi, that when she had something stuck between her teeth, that was considered Chatzitza. There's no requirement of Biat HaMayim into her mouth. The waters do not have to go into her mouth, because that is Beit HaStarim. But the mouth has to be Ra'uya, has to be Ra'ui to have the waters come in. Ra'ui means there's no Chatzitza, number one. And number two is that the mouth is open. It's not sealed shut. She's not holding it tight. Water doesn't have to enter, but it has to be ability that the water can enter into there. And therefore, you have to teach them to open their mouths a little bit when they go into the water. And the same is true. It also says at the end, v'gam, we'll see this later in the Gemara, gam tzarich l'lamda l'chik yerchotea k'tzat. She should move her thighs away from each other, spread her legs a little bit, again, so that the waters can reach all over. And then he talks about the beit ha'erva, or her breasts, that she should make sure that the waters can reach underneath those areas. Again, even though they're beit ha'starim, waters don't have to get in there, just has to be the possibility that the water has access to those areas, even though the water doesn't have to actually reach into those areas. Now, what's very important over here is that the Rabbeinu Hanano, once again, has a different girsa in his Gemara, and many of the Rishonim also had this girsa in their Gemara. The Rishonim argue about the meaning of this girsa in the Gemara. Rashi does not have it in the Gemara. Rashi does not have this girsa. And therefore, Rashi doesn't make any of these distinctions to halacha. It's pretty clear that many of the Rishonim, including the Ran, the Rif, the Rambam, all had this girsa, and they have different interpretations of that girsa that the Rach has. Tosafot quotes this girsa of the Rach, and he says, "Achar kaze katu beperish Rabbeinu Chananel, ubemiksat asfarim." In other Gemaras, other Ketav Yad, they found this girsa. "Veleit hilchata kocho hani shmaitata." The halacha is not like anything that is written here. That all of these things that we just listed here, now all, the problem here with the word all is, what does all mean? And that is the machloket and Rishonim, how many things are included in this all? How far back do we go in the Gemara to include the word all? But the basic premise of this is that these issues, these things here are chumrot that deal with taharot. They're not a requirement for a nida or for a woman, for a bala. These issues of chatzitza are not things that we have to worry about, they're not issues at all. And these are only hakpadot or chumrot for taharot. So the way the Rabbeinu Chananel writes it, then everything that we just learned is not relevant for a nida. Tosafot brings back and forth, weighs back and forth, and he says that Rashi b'tshuvato says, Rashi is clear. He doesn't have the girsa, or he eliminated the girsa of the Rach. And he says that everything we read till now is equally applicable to a woman who's a nida, as well as taharot. And Tosfot goes back and forth, back and forth. In the end, he seems to lean to the fact that the halacha is that it's only by taharot. But nevertheless, the halacha is, and the Shulchan Aruch brings down, that despite the fact that if you hold like this girsa of the Rach, that none of this is applicable to a nida, we are machmir to make sure that all of these things do apply to a nida, and therefore our women today are makpidot on all of these items that are here. Bishat Adchak, the Shach writes that you could rely on these if there's one of these issues, and for whatever extenuating circumstances you need a heter, then we can rely on these Rishonim who say that in Okanami this isn't the halacha for a woman who is a nida. Tosfot discusses them. They're very interesting reasons. One of them is that the next line in the Gemara, which is also part of this, is that it's a statement by Reish Lakish. And basically the way the Girsa reads is that everything until now is not halacha, but Reish Lakish is la halacha. And what's very difficult about that is that every memra that we had until now was based on an Amora that was from Bavel. Reish Lakish is found in Eretz Yisrael. So why would you have a statement in the Gemara that some Ben Eretz Yisrael has a statement and everybody in Bavel we disregard? So it's very difficult to have such a thing that you have a flow in a Gemara where all the Bnei Bavel are talking about their issues, and then all of a sudden Reish Lakish comes in and we're going to say, oh, forget about Bnei Bavel, we're just going to rely on Reish Lakish. So that's one of the reasons that Tosafot brings. Then the other reasons that he writes are, says that they're all formed in the female. He says, if they're written in the female form, then it sounds like these are issues for a nida, not an issues in tarot. If it's tarot, they're equally applicable to a man and a woman. Why would you write everything in Lashon Nekeva? It's relevant by tarot. If it's relevant by tarot, say male or female. In fact, it's all written in the female. Sounds like it's relevant to an isha, only to a woman. And it also brings a Mishnah from Mikvot that seems to include that a nida has some of these issues. And therefore he says, well, if Anita has these issues, where do they get these issues from? It must be that all of these things here apply. So anyway, those are a number of the reasons that Rashi deviates from that girsa or leans away from the girsa of the Rach, because of the fact that over here it is a more likely, or it seems unlikely, that that would be a statement of the Gemara. Now the next statement of the Gemara is Amar Reish Lakish, Haisha lo tidvo ela derach gedilata, that a woman should only go to the mikveh the way that she... Gedilata means the way she grows, literally. But the way Rashi, if you read Rashi, it says that lo tidchak zrota. She shouldn't put her arms so tightly around her. Below raglev shoka, not her legs or her thighs. Zebaze ella kederach halichata, the way she walks normally. Vishimushatamid, the way she presents herself all day. Nichsev kamut ve'ena mayim ba'imbo, areas of her that are normally covered or folded over. She doesn't have to worry about that. Lo ichbatlan ve'ena tzricha lefashet beit matea. She doesn't have to take out all of her folds, ustarea, and all those areas that are covered. Elika Darkan Tamid. She just goes the way she normally walks and the way she's normally found. The way the Rach has the girsa is, the halacha is not like any of these statements before, that we worry about all of these issues, but rather, the woman goes in the way she is, and that's fine. There is, I think, Yireim, who says that when we say the halacha is not like any of these items, includes Reish Lakish. The halacha is not even like Reish Lakish. That the halacha is like none of these memorot, including the memra of Reish Lakish. Although that's, again, much harder, because Reish Lakish seems to be a very reasonable, logical type of halacha. Kedetnan. And how we know that that's true, what Reish Lakish is saying is true? Because we have a Mishnah Negaim. And the Mishnah Negaim is discussing when the Kohen comes to see a Nega, whether it's on a man or a woman, we know that the din is the Chol Mareh Enei HaKohen, that it's based on what the Kohen could see, what's visible to the Kohen. So how much in the way of contortions does the person have to do in order to make it visible to the Kohen? So here the Mishnah lays out what you do. It says, Aish Nireh Oder Umoseg Zedim, that the man looks like as if he is hoeing or he is picking the olives. Aisha, the woman appears ke oreget, like she's weaving, ukemenikat bina, and she is nursing her child. Rashi over here gives an explanation which is somewhat difficult. Tosafot already questions it. The most likely description over here is when we're discussing the beta shechi, which is the underarms, and the beta erva, but not really the beta erva itself, but between the legs. Between the legs normally is an area that's not easy to see. How far apart do they have to spread their legs in order to make it visible to the Kohen? So the answer is ke'oder, when he's hoeing. When a person hoes, they spread their legs out a little bit and they move the hoe down and they chop down between. So they spread their legs. That's the amount they have to spread their legs. And if it's visible to Kohen in that position, that's fine. Same thing with Mosek Zaitim. Rashi claims it's about bending down. The more likely scenario is that he's picking. So he doesn't have to raise his hand or open up his underarm. He just has to do as if he's picking the olives off the tree. And if it's visible to the Kohen in that position, that's enough. By the woman. We're talking about here, again, Oreget. And the Mishnah actually has Keorechet, that she's setting up the Isa. So again, between her legs will be when she's working with the dough in front of her. So there again, she has to stand herself, position herself. She doesn't stand with her feet together. She stands with her legs slightly apart or slightly ajar. That's enough. And that's the Chumar Neo Kohen. Oreget is weaving is again for her underarms. The way she moves around her arms, that's the visibility for her underarms. And Menikat Ben Eyes for the Erev of the Isha, the breasts. How much does a Kohen have visibility to the breast? She could be as if she is nursing her child. When she's nursing her child, if it's visible in that scenario, then it's visible. Otherwise, she doesn't have to worry about it. But what do we see from this Mishnah? We see from this Mishnah that it's all based on the natural positions of the individual. And so Reish Lakish says that's the same thing by Tarata Mikveh. When you go into the Mikveh, you go in the normal way in your natural position. You don't have to do any acrobatics to go to the Mikveh. You do it like you normally would walk and present yourself in general. Now we move on in terms of chatzitzot. The next one is Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna, Nima Achat Kshura Chutzetzet. If you have one hair that is tied, that is a chatzitza. Now whether the hair is tied on itself or it's tied by a foreign object, either way you can get a very tight hold around the hair and that will create a chatzitza. On the other hand, Shalosh, if you have three hairs together, whether they're tied on themselves or tied by a foreign object, Eino Chutzetzet. There you can't get a tight hold or a tight tie and therefore there's no chatzitza. Shtayim any of there. He says, two, I don't know what the din is. We only hear that the din of chatzitza applies to one hair. Above one hair, there is no din of chatzitza. Amar Rav Yitzchok. So now Rav Yitzchok explains, what is the principle here with the din of chatzitza? Dvar Torah, mina Torah, rubo, hamakpid alav chutzitz. If it's the majority, and you're makpid, meaning that it bothers you, whatever is there bothers you, then it's a chatzitza. What the robe is speaking about is somewhat difficult. Rashi over here says the robe means the robe of the head, of your hair. The majority of the hairs were tied singly. That's what the problem is over here. But Rashi only applies it to the head. He says that the majority of robe, we're just speaking about your head. Tosafot, not here, but in other places, mentions that the robe that we're speaking about here is the entire body. It has to be the robe of the entirety of the body, not just of the head. So that would be a big nafkamina l'aloch about when we're talking about robe. Does robe mean of any section of the body? Or does it mean of the entirety of the body? But Mina Torah, it has to be rove or whatever you consider the baseline for rove, and it has to be makpid, that you care about this, it bothers you and you want to remove it. But, on the other hand, if you have rubo ve'enu makpid alav, enu chutzetz, even if it's the majority of your body, but if you're not makpid on it, you're not chutzetz. We saw this earlier in the Gemara, that everything is bakpada talia milta, that everything has to do with whether you care about it or not. If it bothers you, it's a problem. If it doesn't bother you, it's not a problem. But it has to be, and here's the definition, Minat Torah, rov. And along come the Chachamim and their gozer. Gazru al rubo, sheino makpid. In a case where it covers the majority of your head or the majority of your body, but you don't care about it, nevertheless, we're going to say it's a problem of chatzitza, mishum, because of rubo al makpid. So you're missing one of the variables. When you're missing one of the variables, we're going to say, the Chachamim say, we're gozer there in case you have both variables. And the same thing the other way around, v'gazru al miuto al makpid. If it's something that does not meet the standard of rove or the threshold of rove, but nevertheless you're makpid on it, there also the din chachamim will say that it's a chatzitza mishum robo hamakpid. Again, because of the problem, if you could get to doraita, if you fill in the missing variable. So Mary asks, v'ligzor nami al miuto she'enu makpid. So what about the case where it's a miut and there's no akpada? You're missing both variables. Mishum, why won't you be gozer? Mishum miuto hamakpid. Because by a case of miut hamakpid, we say it is a chatzitza. So one step away from that is when it's a miut sheino makpid. My answer is very simply, who gufa gzeira v'anan ninkom v'negzer gzeira l'gzeira? That's a second derivative already. The whole reason that we say that miut, where your makpid is problematic, is only because of the possibility of rov v'makpid. So now you're going to say that we're going to say miut sheino makpid. We're going to make a gzeira on that because of the gzeira of miut shemakpid, which is a gzeira because of rubo makpid. That's too far-fetched. That's a gzera l'gzera or a second derivative, and that we don't do. Right now, we move on to the timing of tefillah. So now we dealt with so far, which is the issue of chatzitza. Now we're moving on to the issue of when does the woman go to the mikveh when it comes to nida. So Amarav, nida bizmana, and nida goes in her proper time. Eino tovela dela balayla. She must go at night. The first 7 days, she's a nida. And as Rashi points out, it says, tiyeh benidata. She remains in Nidah for the entire 7 days, and that means there is no break. She has to complete 7 days as a Nidah and then go to the mikveh. That would only permit her to go to the mikveh at night. Bishlobizmana, what happens if she goes to the mikveh not on after the day of seven? She goes on day eight, day nine. She's already allowed to go to the mikveh, but she just didn't go on time. Then can she go during the day instead of at night? Tovela bembeyom bembelaila. Rav says there's no longer this restriction. The restriction of night is only because she has to complete a full 7 days. So if she wants to go on the night after the seventh day, she must go at night because she can't go before that. Anytime after that, she can go to the mikveh whenever she wants. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ben bizmana, ben shelo bizmana. It's irrelevant whether she goes at the right time or post that time, meaning if she doesn't go immediately after she's a nida, but she goes at a later date, eno tovela de elo balayla. She must go at night, mishom srach bita, because of the problem that it could cause for her daughter. Her daughter is aware of the fact when her mother goes to the mikveh. She has a sense of when her mother goes to the mikveh. And what is she going to do? She's going to sense that her mother went to the mikveh during the day. She's not going to know so well whether her mother's going to the mikveh because she went on the eighth day or the ninth day, or she's going right after the 7 days. And she's not going to know to differentiate. What is she going to learn from her mother? That you can go to the mikveh during the day and you can go at night. It doesn't matter. And then that's going to cause her in the future a huge problem. She'll come into a problem of safek karet. She'll end up going to the mikveh on her seventh day of a nidah, and that'll be improper going to the mikveh. So because of that, we say that a woman must always go to the mikveh at night. Rav Hadarbe. Rav also rescinded his position, and he agreed with Rabbi Yochanan. Da'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Ashi amar Rav, nidah ben bizmana ben shlo bizmana, eina tovelet elo balayla mishum srach bita. So we see that Rav
reversed,
rescinded his position, and agreed with Rabbi Yochanan in the end that we always, when it comes to a nidah, must go to the mikveh at night. Now, itkin Rav Idi Benarsh, the mitvil biyoma tamnianya, that he was matakin in his city, that the women who were nidot went to the mikveh during the day on the eighth day, mishumar yuto, because they had a problem with lions. They had lions out that roamed about at night, and if the women went to the mikveh at night, they were endangering their lives to go with the lions. So he was matakin in his city that the women go to the mikveh on the daytime of the eighth day in order to avoid that problem, but also to be post the 7 days. And so they went during the daytime. Rav Acha bar Yaakov bepapunia mishum ganve. He instituted the same takana. He allowed the women to go to the mikveh on the eighth day because at night there were thieves or marauders about and it was dangerous for the women to go to the mikveh. So he allowed them to go to the mikveh on the eighth day. Rav Yehuda bepumpadita mishum tzina. He allowed the women to go to the mikveh on the eighth day because of the cold. It was either dangerous for their health. They would not go to the mikveh properly because it was cold and they would rush in and out of the mikveh. So he allowed them to go during the day in order to avoid that problem. Rova ben Mechuza in his city, Mishum Abulai. He allowed the women to go to the mikveh on the day, during the day of the eighth day, because of the Abulai. Now, what are these Abulai? Rashi gives two interpretations. One is Shomrei Ha'ir. They were the gatekeepers or the guards of the city, V'ovdei Kochavim Heim, and they were non-Jews. So either there was some sort of danger or problems with the women going at night and being exposed to these individuals, or the problem was that they locked the gates at night. So if the women went out to the mikveh, they locked the gates, and they didn't care about the fact that these women were going to the mikveh, and they locked them out of the city. So because of that, he allowed them to go to the mikveh on the eighth day. The other interpretation Rashi brings is that there were these pits or ditches on the way to the mikveh. At night, when there was no light, the women were in danger of falling into these pits on their way to the mikveh. So he said, go during the day when they could see where they were going. So now, Amrlei Rav Papa L'Rova Ule Abaye, or the other girsa possibly is L'Abaye, Virava to Rabbi and Rava, Michde Haidna. Today, Kulu Safek Zavot Shavinu Rabbanon. Today, and we learned this in yesterday's daf with regards to Amar Rabbi Zeira. Amar Rabbi Zeira that our women are Machmirin al Atzman, that any Tipat Hardal, that when they see a blood that the size of a mustard seed, that they wait Shiva Nikiim. They treat themselves like a Zavag Dola. This restriction of going to the mikveh at night is only a din in Nida. Nida has to have a complete 7 days. And after she completes the 7 days, then she can go to the mikveh. That's why she must go to the mikveh at night. But by a zavah and a shomeret yom keneged yom, there's no problem with going to the mikveh during the day. Mikveh yom is kikulo. And the mikveh of the day, betara, she can go to the mikveh and she just has to wait for sunset to be completely tahor. But ain't achanami, she can go to the mikveh during the day. So if our women are treating everything like a zavah gdola and they have shivin akim, maybe litvilinu biyom amad, dishviyah. They should go on the 7th day to the mikveh. Yeah, they're way past the 7 days of Nida. They're nowhere near days 7 days of Nida anymore. They're at a minimum of 10 to 12 days after seeing their first Damim, so there's no chance they're a Nida. There's no chance they need it. There's no reason for them to go to mikveh at night. But they said, no, Mishum Rabbi Shimon. They don't do this because of Rabbi Shimon. The Tanya, we have a Braita. Achar Titar. After she goes to the mikveh, she'll be Tahor. Achar Achar Lekulan. So that is, that it has to be after everything. Shlo Tum'am Afsekeh B'nehem. As we learned early in the Masechta, that during the Shiva Nikim, she may not have any interruption. If she has a sighting of Ziva, or Zav has a sighting of Zav during his Shiva Nikim, or during her Shiva Nikim, it undermines the Shiva Nikim, and she has to restart the count. That means after the completion of the entire Shiva Nikim, meaning that you have still sightings of Tuma, that's when you can become Tahor. Rabbi Shimon adds an additional limud here, which is, Achar Tidar, Achar Maseh Tidar. As soon as she goes to the mikvah, she is Tahorah. She can go on the morning of the seventh day. We talked about this again earlier in the Masechta on Daf Chaf Aleph with regards to the Torah, that she goes to the mikveh on the morning of the seventh, mikveh de Yom Kekulo, she's Torah, and she can work with Tarot, she can do whatever she wants. What's the problem? And we mentioned this earlier in the Masechta as well. Aval amru chachamim asur lasot kein. We don't let her do this. Shema tavoli de safek, because she might run herself into a safek. What's the problem here? If she goes to the mikveh on the day of the seventh, and now she's Tahor. She still has to keep a complete Shiva Nikim. If she has a sighting of Ziva or Dam on that seventh day, that will cause her a problem and will undermine her Shiva Nikim. She's gone to the mikvah. She thinks she's Tahorah. So now she's going to be together with her husband. Gets together with her husband. And then after she's together with her husband, all of a sudden she has a sight of Damim. That undermines her whole Shiva Nikim. She's really not Tahorah. And now she's going to have been together with her husband when she was really a Zavah Gdolah, when she was a Nida. That's a Chiyuv Karet. The Chamim said, we don't allow her to go to the mikveh because of this. Now, what exactly transpired over here is a good question. What does Rabbi Shimon say, and what do the Chachamim say? It's machloket in the Rishonim. Tosafot actually brings both down, but favors one of them. And that is that Tosafot favors Rabbi Shimon is the one who's saying, Aval Amru Chachamim. Rabbi Shimon believes that even though, Minat Torah, the woman could go to the mikveh on the seventh day, but because of this problem of Tashmisha Mitah, he said the women should not go to the mikveh, and they obviously cannot have tashmish on that seventh day. But Rabbi Shimon himself agreed that we wipe out everything that is there. We don't allow her to go to the mikveh on that seventh day. The Ramban, another of the Rishonim from Tzarfat, suggests that Rabbi Shimon believes you can go to the mikveh. The only thing Amru Chachamim is that you can't have tashmish. You're allowed to go to the mikveh on the seventh day, but the Chachamim say don't do that because she might come to tashmish amitah. But ain't Ochanami. She could go to the mikveh on the seventh day. It's just we won't allow her to be together with her husband afterwards because we're going to wait and make sure that everything goes through smoothly. It's mikveh yom kekulo to permit her to go to the mikveh. It's not mikveh yom kekulo to say that everything afterwards is irrelevant. It means that the day still needs to be betara. The mikveh yom kekulo is only effective in allowing her to go to the mikveh before the end of the day. All right, so just here, we should note that there's a very fundamental Tosafot which has impact on what we do today or the practice of our women today. Because it seems pretty clear from cases of Zavah Gdolah, that's a din, you can go to the mikveh during the day. When it comes to a nida, you got only go to the mikveh at night. Our women are all treating themselves like zavot, gedolot, they're treating themselves with a shiva nikim. Maybe they should be able to go tonight. And Tosafot says, lek ale frushke, the dafka b'nida asur. Don't think that when the Gemara says the problem with srach bita means that only by nida is it problematic. But by zavag dola, it's not problematic. He says, I'll tell you how I know that's not true. We have here a list of exceptions, extenuating circumstances, where Amoraim allowed the women to go to the mikveh during the day. But it's clear from these Amoraim, the only reason they let these women go to the mikveh during the day is because of the extenuating circumstances. Had it not been the extenuating circumstances, they would have said the women had to go to the mikveh at night. These Amoraim are all post-Rabbi Zeira. And so you see here that all these Amoraim are demanding that the women go to the mikveh at night, even though they're being shomeret Shiva Nikim and having to practice like we have today to treat themselves like Zavot Gedolot. And so from there, Tosafot proves that a woman must go to the mikveh at night today. That if there is no extenuating circumstances, the woman must go to the mikveh at night. And when he talks about that, he says that the hakpada is not that she actually goes to the mikveh at night. The hakpada is that she doesn't come home till it's night. Because the problem is srach bita, is that what her daughter thinks. So his daughter is not going to be concerned about when she leaves the house, it's about when she comes home. And so therefore, as long as she comes home when it's nighttime, there's no issue in terms of going to the mikveh. We are makpi today that they don't even go to the mikveh before, let's say, takochavim, that we make sure that it's at night that they go to the mikveh. But the Rabbeinu Tam points out that it's enough that she just comes home after nightfall, not that she actually goes into the mikveh after nightfall. Ah, that's interesting. So during the first Gulf War, when it was dangerous, they were allowed to go out early. My brother-in-law told me of a case where Rabbi Willick, there was a woman who had broken her ankle, and she was in a wheelchair, and it was Shabbat. And she needed to go to the mikveh, and she couldn't walk, obviously, to the mikveh for Friday night. So in that extenuating circumstance, he mentioned that he allowed the woman to go to the mikveh during the day, but on a condition that when she came back to the house, the husband would not be in the house. The husband had to be in shul, so that would be no possibility, no issues whatsoever, and that he permitted in that extenuating circumstance, he allowed the woman to go to the mikveh during the day, because otherwise it would have been impossible for her to go to the mikveh in that situation, because she obviously couldn't drive, and she couldn't walk. So that would have created a huge problem, and so he was matir again, in that very, very extenuating circumstances. It's very rare that people are matir because of this problem of srach bita, and so it really has to be something that is extreme, and even when it's extreme, they put a lot of gderot around it. They make sure that it won't be extrapolated, it won't be used on a frequent basis, it's a one-time heter. We're moving on now to the next part of the sugya. So what we've dealt with so far is the issues of chatzitza by tefillah. Now we dealt with the timing of tefillah. Now we're going to deal with the last issue of tefillah, which is this chafifa. Chafifa we touched on yesterday, but I mentioned yesterday, Tosfot says yesterday's chafifa was not a din in halachic terms, but a din in, they have to get rid of the chatzitzot, and how close you do it to the tefillah will have ramifications about what you're protected from when you come out of the mikveh. If you find something afterwards, how protected you are will be how close. Now over here, the Gemara is going to discuss the halachic necessity to have chafifa close to the going to the mikveh. Tosafot, yesterday we discussed the machloket about whether chafifa only applies to the rosh or applies to the entire body. He says that it seems to be in the term, again, the modern Hebrew term, as well as in the Gemara, is used almost exclusively with the head. Nevertheless, Tosafot says, even though we really think that the chafifa of the Gemara is only talking about your head, nevertheless, we're not willing to take that risk, and therefore we said that women have to do chafifa for their entire body and their heads, and that's what we are makpid on today, that women bathe and cleanse themselves entirely, both their head and their body, take a bath beforehand, in order to make sure that there are no chatzitzot. When do they do this chafifa? Amar Rav Huna, I have a machloka between Rav Huna and Rav Chista here. Amar Rav Huna, isha chofefet be'achad b'shabbat, betovelet b'shlishi b'shabbat. A woman can cleanse herself on Sunday, and then go to the mikveh on Tuesday. Why? Because we have an example like that. Shekein isha chofefet be'erev shabbat. A woman cleanses herself or takes care of all this problem on Friday, afternoon before Shabbat. Tovelet b'motzei Shabbat. And she goes to the mikveh afterwards on Motzei Shabbat. So that's the equivalent of going from Sunday to Tuesday. It's just there. They're going from Friday afternoon till Motzei Shabbat. It's the same thing. He's going to say she can do the chafifa late on Sunday afternoon. And she'll go to the mikveh Tuesday night, means Monday night. Meaning the Monday night going into Motzei Monday night going into Tuesday. Yetz Yom Shlishi already. Isha chufefet be'achad b'Shabbat v'tovelet b'revi Shabbat. The same is true. A woman could on Sunday afternoon do the chafifa and then enter the mikveh on Tuesday night going into Yom Revi'i. We have to go to the mikveh, Shekein. We have a case like that. She isha chufefet be'erev Shabbat. She cleanses herself on Erev Shabbat v'tovelet b'motzei Yom Tov she'chal yot achar Shabbat. Like this year where Shavuot fell out after Shabbat. So over there, she would only go to the mikveh after Yom Tov, because that's her night to go to the mikveh, but she can't do the chafifa on Shabbat, she can't do the chafifa on Yom Tov, she does the chafifa already back on Erev Shabbat. So they'll be separated by 2 days. So he says, just like there, you can be separated by 2 days, so too in the regular week. I could even have a case where Sunday afternoon, she does the chafifa, and then Wednesday night, meaning going into Thursday, Yom Chamishi, she'll be able to go to the mikveh. Why? Shekein isha chofevet be'erev Shabbat v'tovelet b'motzei shnei yomim tim shel Rosh Hashanah shechal yot achar Shabbat. If Rosh Hashanah falls out on Sunday, which is not possible today, lo adu Rosh, but in the time where it could fall out on Sunday, you could have Shabbat, Sunday, Monday be Rosh Hashanah. So she can't do the chafifa on Shabbat and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. She's going to the mikveh on motzei Rosh Hashanah. She does the chafifa on erev Shabbat. So you're separated by 3 days. Same thing here. On Sunday afternoon, she'll do the chafifa, and she'll only go to the mikveh on Thursday. Thursday meaning Wednesday night, going into Thursday. That's Rav Huna's position. Rav Chista Amar, Kulu Amrinan. Everything you said is true with regards to Shabbat and Yom Tov. She can clean herself, she can do the chafifa on Erev Shabbat, and then go to the mikveh, either Motzei Shabbat vi Yom Tov, or Motzei Shabbat and Shnei Yomim Tovim Shrash Hashanah, all of that is true. Shekein Lo Amrinan. But we do not extrapolate that din like you did. To Sunday, to a regular weekday. Why? Heicha de'efshar efshar. Heicha de'lo efshar, lo efshar. There's a difference between what's possible and plausible and what's not. In the case, by Yom Tov and Shabbat, she has no choice. She can't clean herself on Shabbat and on Yom Tov, and therefore she has to get to the mikveh Motzei Yom Tov or Motzei Shabbat. She has to do it on Erev Shabbat. In the cases of Sunday to Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, all of those cases are cases where she could do it on the other days. Oh, so Shaul asks a very important question. Why can't she do it on Motzei Shabbat or Motzei Yom Tov? The belief is, and we're going to see this in the Gemara in a second, because you're going to rush. She wants to get to the mikveh quickly. She wants to get home quickly. And because she's in a rush, she's not going to do the chafifa properly. So since she won't do the chafifa properly, we want her to do it during the daytime where she's more relaxed and she's not under pressure. So we want to eliminate the pressure of having the night of the mikveh and the chafifa together where she's going to skimp on the chafifa in order to get to the mikveh and get home quickly. So that's why we opt for doing it on Erev Shabbat versus doing it on the night when she goes to the mikveh. Now we have one more opinion here, which is Rav Yemar Amar, Afilu Shekein Nami Amrinan, Levar Misha Chufefet Becha B'Shabbat V'Tovelet B'Chamishi B'Shabbat. Okay, and we do have this extrapolation, except for the extrapolation of 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Why? To the Motzei Shnei Yom Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah Shal Achar Shabbat Leta. There we don't do it. Devsher Chufefet Balayla V'Tovel Balayla. There she can go after Rosh Hashanah at night, do the Chafifa at night, and do the Mikveh at night. Exactly what Shaul, what you just asked. Because he says it's just too far apart. We can't give her such a widespread of 4 days where we let her do the chafifa and then go to the mikveh. It's just not a realistic solution to the problem. She's just too much time between the time that she's cleansing herself and going to the mikveh. So there we're going to take the risk and say go at night and do your chafifa at night because we're going to give that preference over giving such a widespread. And then Darush Mreimar. Mreimar says, Hilchotok Rav Chista. The loch is like Rav Chista. Ukimitarez Rav Yemar. And the way that Rav Yemar explained him, what Rashi explains is that we go to Chumrah in both of them. Rav Chista is the Chumrah, which is that we only apply this to cases where it's EFSHAR. We don't extrapolate this to cases where it's EFSHAR. In cases where you could do the Chafifa right before you go to the Mikveh, I mean on the day before, we're not going to allow you to move it earlier. In cases where it's impossible, like Erev Shabbat, where you're going in Motzei Shabbat, over there we're going to allow you to do it. Then we're also going to pass on the Chumrah with Rav Yemar. Rav Yemar says that that din of allowing you to go in Erev Shabbat does not apply when it's Shabbat and then Shnei Yomim Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah. So we'll paskin like that. You're right. You can't go on Erev Shabbat going into Shabbat and 2 days of Rosh Hashanah where you're going to go on Motzei Rosh Hashanah. There you can't even do it on Erev Shabbat. Other cases where it's Shabbat or Shabbat V'Yom Tov, we will allow you to do that. In addition to that, that's only time we allow you to do that. We won't allow you to do that when there's no issue of Shabbat or Yom Tov. We'll tell you you have to go on the day immediately before you go to the mikveh. So, Ibailuhu, Ishau, Mashu Techuf Balayla V'Titvo Balayla. This is your question, Joel. What is the case? Can a woman go and cleanse herself at night and then go into the mikveh at night? Do everything at night. So Marzutra Oser, Marzutra says it's problematic. Rav Chinina Misura Shari. Rav Chinina says that it's fine. So Amalei Rav Ado, now argues is Rav Chinina Misura, the Mabach changed the gear to Marzutra, who said it's Asur. So he's challenging the fact that it's Asur, and you'll see from the case that it sounds like it was Mutar. The fact that it was Mutar, it sounds like it's a question on Marzutra. Which is Lav Hachi Abba Uvdo Bidibitu de Abba Mori. This was a case by the wife of Abba Mori, who was the Reish Galuta de Ikot. She was upset at the Reish Galuta. She got mad at him, she was quarreling with him, and she refused to go to the mikveh. On the night that she was supposed to go to the mikveh, she refuses to go to the mikveh. So Azar Rav Nachman Yitzchak de Fiusa. I guess the Reish Galuta encouraged Rav Nachman Yitzchak to go to her, to encourage her to go to the mikveh, and to appease her, to bring her to the point where she'd be willing to go to the mikveh. Vamalei Maiti Hashto. What are you doing here tonight? Your being here tonight is going to make no difference. Tiskei va'aiti l'machar. Wait and come back tomorrow, and then there'll be something to discuss. V'yada ma'ika amrale. And Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchok understood, he intuited what she was saying to him. What was she saying to him? She didn't do her chafifa yet. She hadn't cleansed herself yet. If she hadn't cleansed herself, she can't go to the mikveh tonight anyway. No matter what he says now, she's not going to the mikveh because she didn't clean herself. She didn't clean herself, she can't go to the mikveh. What is Rav Nachman Yitzchak's answer to her? Amar, Dodi, or the other one is Yoro Chasar. She's the wife of the Reish Galuta. You don't have enough pots over here? You don't have enough cauldrons over here? Tashtuke Chasar? You're missing stools or something to sit on? Avde Chasar? You don't have enough servants to warm up the water? The Chafifa requires a stool to be sat on. It requires hot water in order to do the Chafifa. And Rav Nachman Yitzchak was posing the question to her is what? It's impossible for you to do the Chafifa now? You have enough, you have the means by which to do the chafifa at night. You're a lady of stature, you're a lady of the wife of the Reish Galuta, you could do the chafifa now. The implications from this are that Rav Nachman Yitzchak was suggesting you can do chafifa at night and go to the mikveh at night. And that's why I question on Marzutra, who says it's asur. Because here you see that it was mutar. So now Doresh Rava, Rava was Doresh, Isha chofefet be'erv Shabbat, v'tovelet v'metzei Shabbat. A woman is allowed to do the cleansing, her bathing on Erev Shabbat, and then go to the mikveh on Motzei Shabbat. So Amalei Rav Papa the Rava, Baha Shalach Ravin Be'igartei, Ravin sent to us in a letter, Isha lo tachuf be'erev Shabbat, v'titvo b'motzei Shabbat. She may not bathe, cleanse herself on Erev Shabbat, and then go to the mikveh on Motzei Shabbat. Tamal atzmecha, hey, chofefet b'yom, v'tovelet b'layla. Well, how could it be possible? Why? Because habina and take of the chafifa tvila vileka. We have a requirement that a woman only can go to the mikvah when she has done the chafifa, when she's done her cleansing and bathing immediately beforehand. She must do the cleansing and bathing immediately before she goes to the mikveh. Oh, very good. So David asks a very important question. This is against everything we just said in the previous Gemara. In the previous Gemara, we concluded that you're allowed to do this. And now all of a sudden the Gemara is saying that you're not allowed to do this. So how do we reconcile that? Well, we'll finish up the Gemara and we'll come back and explain how do we reconcile between these two Gemaras, which seems to now come to different conclusions. Because here it says, take of the chafifat to be allowed, which means that you can't do an Erev Shabbat, which is way before she goes to the mikvah on Motzei Shabbat. So hadar uki rova amora ale. So then Rava put up an amora. Amora is the equivalent of a megaphone, someone who would speak over the drasha of the Talmud Chacham v'dorash. That which I told you beforehand was a mistake. The fact that I told you cleanse yourself, bathe on Erev Shabbat, go to the mikvah Motzei Shabbat, that was a mistake. Baram kach amru mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. This is the halacha mishmei de Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Avin, when he sent the letter, he was sending a letter about a memra from Rabbi Yochanan in Eretz Yisrael. Isha lo tachuf be'erev Shabbat v'tvo b'motzei Shabbat. Because how could you do it that she's doing the chafifa Erev Shabbat and going to the mikvah Motzei Shabbat? Habeinan samuch lechafifa tvila. We require that the chafifa come immediately before the tvila veletkan. You don't have that here. Vehilchata. This is the halacha. Isha chofefet beyom v'tovelet belayla. The proper way to do this is that a woman does the chafifa during the day and then goes to mikvah at night. And that would imply even on Erev Shabbat. She could do it on Erev Shabbat and go at night. Vehilchata. But also the halacha is, Isha lo tachuf elo balayla. A woman must do the chafifa at night. So there's a stira in halachas. Kasha hilchata hilchata. Now you have a stira in halacha. One halacha says you do it during the day and then at night, including Erev Shabbat to Motzei Shabbat. The other halacha says you only do it at night, meaning that you do it on Motzei Shabbat. You do the everything. Chafifa and tefillah on Motzei Shabbat. Lo kasha hada efshar hada lo efshar. Has to do with what is possible and not possible. In a case where it's possible, the proper way is to do the chafifa during the day and to go to the mikveh at night. That way she's not under pressure when it comes to the chafifa. And at night she goes to the mikveh and she does it in the day immediately before going at night. On the other hand, where it's efshar, what's the case of efshar? A case of Shabbat. Case where it's Erev Shabbat going to Motzei Shabbat. If she does the chafifa on Erev Shabbat and then goes to the mikveh on Motzei Shabbat, they will not be close together. In that case where it's impossible, we allow her to do the chafifa at night. Say do the chafifa on Motzei Shabbat and go to the mikveh on Motzei Shabbat. So when we're faced with the choice between doing chafifa at night or during the day, but doing during the day is going to separate between the chafifa and the mikveh, we opt for doing the chafifa at night. In a case where we have the opportunity or the ability to do the chafifa during the day, but before the tefillah, on that same day before the tefillah, over there we encourage you to do the chafifa during the day. We say halacha is to do it during the day. Tosfot over here says the Gemara is not discussing when in the day she does it, how close to the time that she goes to the mikveh, we're not discussing that. But at least ask me on that same day that she's going to the mikveh. David asked the question. It's a very obvious question. Tosfot asks. Says, our Gemara over here concludes that you're better off doing the chafifa at night and not doing on Erev Shabbat. The previous Gemara, we had pasuk halacha like Rav Chista and like Rav Yemar, which said that you can do it on Erev Shabbat for Motzei Shabbat. Tosfot says it depends on when she's supposed to go to the mikveh. For instance, what happens if it's a case where it's Shabbat and then Yom Tov? All the cases that we discussed now with Shabbat and Yom Tov, she's supposed to go to the mikvah on Motzei Yom Tov. So the question was, should she do the chafifa, do the cleaning and bathing on Erev Shabbat, and then go to the mikvah on Motzei Yom Tov? Over there, our Gemara says, no way, no how. It's too far apart. What about the Gemara before that says it's muteret, or that she's allowed to do this? Oh, that Gemara is talking about where she's going to the mikvah on Motzei Shabbat. It's Shabbat and then Yom Tov. And she's going to the mikvah on Motzei Shabbat. She's going on basically on Yom Tov. She's going to be going to the mikveh. Over there, she can't do the chafifa on Shabbat. She can't do the chafifa at night because it's Yom Tov. She can't do the chafifa during the day with Shabbat. There she will do the chafifa on Erev Shabbat. So the case where she's allowed to do it on Erev Shabbat is a case where when she goes to the mikvah, she's going to be going to the mikvah on Yom Tov or Shabbat, and the previous day was Yom Tov or Shabbat. In that case where it's impossible for her to do chafifa at night, and it's impossible for her to do the chafifa beforehand, we allow her to do it on Erev Yom Tov or Erev Shabbat. In a case where it's possible for her to do chafifa at night, we're going to give preference to that. Do it at night on Motzei Shabbat. If that's when you're going, or Motzei Yom Tov, when you're going to the mikveh, do it then. If it's not a problem, that's when you should do it. So that's how Tosfot reconciles between the two Gemaras, and that's the halacha. Now Tosfot brings down the She'iltot. The She'iltot says that the women should do their chafifa at night, right before they go to the mikveh. And that's actually what we do today. The practice of most women is to do the chafifa and the cleansing and the bathing right before they go to the mikveh, and to do it at nighttime. If it's difficult for them, if it's going to cause too much time, then the women have a dispensation to do their bathing and do all their cleansing beforehand in the daytime beforehand, and then they get checked before they do a slight cleansing or cleaning, and they do a combing again of their hair, and they do everything over again just quickly in order to ensure everything is fine before they go to the mikveh. Tosafot discusses over here, and that's where it's Minyona Dioma. The last Tosafot in the Yomot says, what about a case of Tisha B'Av? V'chein, he says, Omeri Dimi'ira Tvilata Leol Tisha B'Av. What happens if the woman is supposed to go to the mikveh on the night of Tisha B'Av? Asura Litvol, she may not go to the mikveh on the night of Tisha B'Av. Now, he says, even though the Gemara says in other places that a woman is allowed to go to the mikveh on the night of Tisha B'Av, that was in their day where taharot were a problem. So when they wanted to be tahora, so that she could work with taharot, then she went to the mikveh on the night of Tisha B'Av. Today, our women only go to the mikveh for one reason. That's to be together with her husband. On Tisha B'Av, she's not permitted to be together with her husband. No reason to go to the mikveh on the night of Tisha B'Av. Now, what should she do if she has to go to the mikveh on Motzei Tisha B'Av? When does she do the chafifa? So, based on our Gemara, it would be optimal to do the chafifa on Motzei Tisha B'Av. She'll do the Motzei Tisha B'Av, do the chafifa, and go to tefillah. But, Tosfot says, the last line on this Amud, the Tosfot says, Vim ein la p'nai l'rchotz v'lachuf b'layla. She doesn't have enough time to do that on Motzei Tisha B'Av. Then, t'rchotz v'tachuf erev Tisha B'Av. Then on erev Tisha B'Av, she can to go to her bathing and cleansing. K'dei she'e b'kala adayin l'chuf tzat Motzei Tisha B'Av l'tbol. So she can do a lighter form of the chafifa on Motzei Tisha B'Av, and then go straight into the mikveh. Again, Minyona Dioma, if she is the night of the mikveh, is the night of Tisha B'Av, she doesn't go. It's Motzei Tisha B'Av, she has a dispensation to do her chafifa on Erev Tisha B'Av. Again, obviously when it's an extenuating circumstances or it's difficult for her on Motzei Tisha B'Av. And she'll just have to do a quick repeat on Motzei Tisha B'Av. This year actually works out to be slightly differently, which is that on the night of Tisha B'Av, she is permitted to go to the mikveh, even though it's brought down the halacha that a husband should not be together with his wife. It's our case where Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos and Nidche to Sunday. Even though Me'ikar Din, the halacha on the Inuim only apply on Sunday, we're makpid on Tisha B'Av itself, for Dvarim Shibitzina like this, that husband should not be together with his wife, even on Shabbat, except if it's Leil Tvilata. It's a night that she goes to the mikveh. So she is permitted to go to the mikveh on Friday night in this case, because that's Leil Onata, it's Leil Tvilata, and she would be permitted to go to the mikveh and to be together with her husband in this unusual case. Otherwise, in a normal case where it falls out on Tisha B'Av night, where she couldn't be together with her husband, then there's no reason for her to go to the mikveh. Okay, we'll stop over here.